I know the Cavs are back. That's big news, too. But Kevin Stefanski has given away his play-calling duties to Ken Dorsey. Kevin says he's got full confidence in Ken, while none of us have confidence in any of it because they are 1-6. And obviously, this weekend, you got a big divisional matchup with the Ravens. Jameis Winston's a starter. So many different things to get to with our next guest. He joins us every single... Is today Wednesday? Today is Wednesday. It's hump day. He joins us every single Wednesday at 4 o'clock. On the line is Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You said, you know, he joined us every, and you didn't know what day it was?
No, it's been, we're kind of listening closer and closer to the black hole of this Brown season just being the absolute bleep burger of all time. And between that, and we actually have nice weather in Cleveland, it is fritzing out my brain, Ross.
It's so funny that you say that. This might be the nicest October 23rd of all time. I'm literally walking outside as I talk to you because it's that nice here in central Pennsylvania. Same thing.
Well, I got to say, you're a man of your word. You followed me on the TikTok. TikTok. So I got to give you a shout out. If I'm going to bust your haggis for the two previous times, I got to give you credit. You're a man of your word, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I don't know it on TikTok once, but you're welcome.
Listen, it means something. It just means more. It's like the SEC. What is your reaction to Ken Dorsey being the new play caller in Cleveland after a 1-6 start and Deshaun Watson now being out for the season?
I guess I would say curious and maybe a little bit confused. I think you know this, but I'm on the call Sunday for CBS for Ravens-Browns. So I'll be there. I'm coming to the land tomorrow night, actually, late tomorrow night. So I'll be there for the whole weekend. I guess this is maybe just the way my brain works, Nick. And I'll be curious to talk to Kevin Stefanski on Friday and ask him about this. But the way my brain works, I kind of wanted to see Jameis with Stefanski calling the plays. Does that make sense? Like, I wanted to see how the offense operated with Jameis as the starting quarterback, Jameis getting all the practice reps as the starting quarterback, and see what it looked like. Because then we would have the best sort of apples-to-apples comparison of what the offense looked like with Watson when Stefanski was calling it versus what it looked like with Winston with Stefanski calling it. Now we're kind of messing with two variables at the same time. Now we have a new quarterback and a new play caller. So if it's like wildly successful, how do you know how much of that is Jameis and how much of that is Dorsey calling the plays? Now, obviously, I'm guessing that these two things are separate, right? So on the one hand, the Browns have not scored 20 points yet, so Stefanski's kind of giving up the sticks, giving up the controllers, if you will, to Dorsey and giving him a chance. Okay. But then also now we've got Jameis because of the injuries to Watson and DTR. He's going to start. So, listen, maybe it works out wonderfully. I guess we'll see. My brain does better when we only change one thing at a time, if that makes sense.
It does. It definitely felt like the Browns went from making no changes for 7 weeks, and then Deshaun blows out Achilles, and they go, "Well, why don't we just make all the changes there?" So, you know, this leads to the next part of the conversation, which is, and there's been this constant conversation because it's gotten ugly. It's got whether it's, you know, the players calling out fans for this idea that they cheered Deshaun's injury, whether it is Deshaun's injury, the fact that that feels like the final straw for Deshaun in Cleveland, like whichever we're at here now with the play calling thing, it does feel like we're about to see some same old Browns kind of bleep from this organization. Have you seen enough to suggest Kevin Stefanski is in danger this season of losing his job?
I have not. That would surprise me. I do think on some level, the rest of the season does matter. Because it's kind of another one of those deals where if they finish strong, sort of like they did last year with Flacco and make the playoffs and he's coach of the year, you know, that was obviously a very impressive coaching job by Stefanski. So, you know, there's still a lot of football to be played. If they're, you know, 500 or better during the second half of the year, that would kind of lend itself once again to suggest that Stefanski's a pretty darn good coach with anybody other than Deshaun Watson as the quarterback, I guess. I mean, you know, they just signed both those guys to extensions in the offseason, both Stefanski and Andrew Berry. And the guys won the Coach of the Year 2 out of the last 4 years. Now, I'm not saying he's been some awesome coach this year, but to fire a guy the year after he wins Coach of the Year, for the second time in whatever it is, 3 or 4 years, that seems like a stretch. That seems like short-sighted. I wouldn't do it. Go back and look at some of the down years that, like, Bill Cowher had in Pittsburgh. I think just because you have a terrible season doesn't mean you necessarily have to get rid of the coach, because it could be worse, and in Cleveland, it's been a lot worse. I think you guys know you have a good coach now. Now, maybe this hasn't been his best year, and maybe there's a lot of extenuating circumstances. Maybe, obviously, there's several issues, and Deshaun Watson's performance being one of them. I think it would be very short-sighted, and it would be the type of move that is made really just to try to appease the fan base or media. If they let go of Stefanski, I think it'd be the type of move that you make almost like a sacrificial lamb, because the people that make those decisions, like Jimmy Haslam, and I don't know who else is involved, his wife or Dee Podesta or whatever, they know that Stefanski is a good coach. They know that. So if they fire him, it's really just trying to point the finger at someone and have a sacrificial lamb, like I said, as opposed to the harder move at that point, which is to stick with it. I feel like it's easy. Just fire somebody. Then we can all just blame him. Just fire somebody. I feel like that's the easy move to make. The tougher move is say, okay, what can we do with this core group of people that we believe in to get a heck of a lot better than we were this year?
How's that different, though? Because I agree with you. I do think way too often it's the easy thing when it comes to head coaches and GMs. But how's that different from how we treat quarterbacks on any given year? Well, the simple thing is, for whatever reason, hasn't worked out with Deshaun or previously Baker, so just throw him out and we'll get a new one in here.
Yeah, I don't think it is that different. I think most of the time there's only so many levers that an organization can pull, and we see that right now from the Jets, right, where there's these different levers that they can pull, and it's fire the head coach, it's change the play caller, it's change the quarterback, it's make a big move or big trade. I mean, there's like a guide that these owners have somewhere, right? Like idiot's guide to how to try to have a successful NFL season. And I don't know, it doesn't seem like those type of franchises that are constantly pulling levers like the Jets, it doesn't seem like that works very often. You know, it seems like the franchises that never make those moves and are more boring, like the Packers, I don't know, it seems like they typically have more success. So to your point, I don't think it's the same. The difference, I would say, is that, at least in this example, that Stefanski has a much more proven track record over the last 3 or 4 years, in particular in Cleveland, than Deshaun Watson does. Much, much more. And unlike Deshaun Watson, he hasn't gotten, you know, injured, which is part of the deal for a quarterback. Now, also, unlike Deshaun Watson, he's not making over $40 million fully guaranteed. You know, so maybe it does become a situation where it's easier to change out the head coach than the quarterback. I guess we'll find out, in part, based on how the rest of the season goes.
Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase a Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add some deliciousness, extra deliciousness, and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. My read started out with such purpose and really just upside in that first read, and then I damn near drove the thing off the embankment on that one, Ross. Do you think there's any chance we see Deshaun Watson start a game for the Cleveland Browns again?
I think it's unlikely, but life is about options, right? Like, let's see how Winston looks the rest of the year. If he's struggling, they put DTR in. Let's see how he looks. Then let's see exactly where the Browns are drafting and what their options are there, because I don't think they're going to have very many options when it comes to Deshaun Watson and moving on from that contract. I mean, if anything, maybe they can restructure it again where he still gets his $45 million a year each of the next 2 years. But for cap purposes, they can spread it out a little bit more. And I don't know, man, we could be looking at a situation where they just have him stay home, or I guess he'd just be the world's most expensive backup quarterback, maybe. I think that'd be an awkward situation for whoever the starter is, but if you have to have somebody as a backup, I think he's a pretty darn good backup. Obviously, he'd be making a lot more money than anybody else, but he has to be on the roster. You have to be paying him anyway. Cause I just don't think anybody else is going to want to take on that contract or that situation. So he kind of becomes like an albatross hanging around their neck. By the way, I don't even know what an albatross is. I just know that it hangs around your neck and you don't like it. What the heck is an albatross? Like, I know it's a real thing, but all I know is like the sports version of it.
Yeah, it's a bird, although I don't think that's the.
But why is that the expression? Like, why is the expression when you have something hanging around and it's like a bird hanging off your neck? When did that happen?
Maybe
way back in the day.
Maybe people just don't like birds. I mean, maybe that's how this got. I mean, I think it's a great question, by the way.
That is the question. So I'm so curious to talk to Kevin and see Stefanski and see why they made the move. And we'll see, because I think I'd also like to see Winston in sort of Kevin's base offense with, you know, the stretch play, the boots, the outside zone, the play action, which they did more of on Sunday, by the way, against the Bengals. They did more of that with Chubb back in the lineup. But I don't know. I don't know that we're going to get that, and we'll see what Dorsey has.
Well, Ross, the term albatross comes from Samuel Taylor Coleridge's 1798 poem, "The Rime of the Ancient Mariner," in which an albatross visits the mariner and his crew, and the albatross is traditionally believed to bring bad luck. So it is about the bird.
So it's not like hanging around. It just brings bad luck.
Yeah, like a black cat on All Hallows Eve or something like that.
Got it. Well, I mean, Deshaun Watson has both been bad luck and had bad luck since he's been, and it's really for the last go of it. I mean, I'm not going to go there in terms of the off the field stuff, but man, he's had a unique 4 years here. Really unique.
Yeah, did we ruin him? Did he ruin us? I don't know.
Well, and listen, some of it, obviously, a lot of it is evidently his own wrongdoing, but still a lot for any one person to handle, right or wrong, and whether you're happy to deal with it or not, that's up to you, but still a lot to put on one relatively young man.
Ross, we're talking quarterbacks in the draft. I have made a pledge. I am not talking draft, meaning I will not espouse draft opinions until the first week of December. There's no shot in hell I'm keeping it up. There's just none. We're like 3 weeks away from this, tops. But as you are not just an NFL man, you are a college man. Is there a quarterback that you can recommend in the draft that I should start watching?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one I like the most is probably Cam Ward at Miami. That guy is electric. I mean, that guy is fun to watch. Now, I don't know him personally. I did do a Colorado game earlier in the year, and Shedeur Sanders on the field is very impressive. Now, I will say this about Shedeur Sanders. I think Colorado probably has the best quartet of receivers in the country, which I think helps tremendously. But he's a pretty good player, too. Certainly, I like those guys right now more than guys like Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers after watching that Texas-Georgia game. I was not impressed with how either one of those guys, who are also being talked about as first-round picks, wasn't real impressed with those guys. I would say the guy I'm highest on is Cam Ward, with Shedeur Sanders maybe coming up behind him.
I'm so glad you mentioned the wide receivers, because everybody talks about Travis Hunter, but Wester, Shepard, Jimmy Horn Jr., like, they seem to have cloned Travis Hunter of, like, just blazing speed dudes, and they're, like,
well, no,
four or five deep.
Yeah, like, well, so Travis Hunter and Jimmy Horn Jr. would be one of the best pairs of receivers in the country, right? Everybody knows that. They kind of were last year. Well, then all they did was add the guys that broke every record at FAU in LaJonte Wester, and the guy that broke almost every record at Vandy in Will Shepard. Those are their number three and number four guys. So when you game plan against Colorado and they're in those four receiver sets and you've got your third and fourth corners out there, your third or fourth corners are now – that's why so many people play so much zone coverage, because your third and fourth corners are going against – number one, proven number one to other FBS schools. So that's been a big edge, a big help, certainly, for Shedeur Sanders.
If only Deion Sanders had this kind of commitment to finding good offensive linemen, it would just maybe look even better at Colorado. Ross, we're excited to have you on the call on the Ravens-Browns game this Sunday. Excited to have you in town this week. Enjoy it, my guy.
I will. I can't wait. Thank you for the dinner recommendation. I think Taco Bell will be lovely.
Yeah, I think this is new place. It's called, I think it's French. It's called Burger King. I think you can really, really get a nice, they call it the Whopper. I think you'll love it.
Thanks, man. Have a great week. Later, dude.
Later, dude. Ross Tucker there on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That was Odyssey NFL Insider. Ross Tucker Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Just sell that one just for my buddy. Now, when we come back, we'll react to Ross's thoughts on the immediate future of the Cleveland Browns on 92.3 The Fan. They're giving his thoughts on whether Kevin Stefanski is safe. And I think it's interesting. Like, I think the national media has this perception of Kevin Stefanski, and of which Ross is a part of this. And now, in fairness, Ross isn't just some dude that is, like, Ross actually, he's on the call this weekend. Ross was on the Browns call, I think, on the Raiders game. So Ross actually has seen this thing close up. And it's interesting that in between the Raiders and now, that his perception hasn't wavered with Kevin Stefanski at all. And it's interesting, man. Like, you know, sometimes this kind of goes back to the idea of when I think people thought I was like a Deshaun apologist, simply because I refuse to just do the thing that I think is easy and not interesting and not, and honestly, I think it's disingenuous to you. If I just came in here and screamed about Deshaun the last 7 weeks before he tore his Achilles, it might make you feel better. You're hearing what you want, but I'll be honest with you, it's easy if it's Deshaun. It gets much tougher if it's not just Deshaun. And so in that same vein, like with Kevin, I think it's okay to say Kevin has had a lot of success and I still have these questions about him. I don't think we're anywhere close to me thinking Kevin should be fired. But I think what's really, really going to be interesting is, at what point do people who are not following it every day start to pick up on what an absolute crap show that this is in Brea? And again, I think it is easy to say Jimmy Haslam is an impetuous owner who gives in too much to trying to appease the fan and appease that bloodlust for fans. I think that's easy. I think it is easy to say, it's got to be about, you know, like, I'm not saying that when it comes to Kevin that I think he is the biggest problem in Berea. No, I think the Deshaun situation and what led to that and how, and honestly, What led to the failure of it? I think that's super interesting to me. Because if you can pull enough strings, or you can start to think about it enough to figure out, because it would be easy to say, well, Deshaun wasn't healthy, and Deshaun came to Cleveland a broken man. That can be true. And there can be others, there are other things at play. And I think with Kevin, if we're going to truly assess whether Kevin is the right head coach, because here's the thing, everybody should be doing this. If you want to put it on Andrew Berry, let's talk through that. Andrew Berry's drafts have not been good enough. I cannot remember who it was, so for the life of me, I'm sorry. There was a fan Twitter account, not a fan, like a Browns fan. His last name. Nope, we're going to butcher that. Sorry. I'm trying to figure this out in real time, trying to remember things, and I can't remember. Much. Jameis today said he can't remember 2 years ago. I can't remember, apparently, earlier this afternoon when I read this. But he basically did, like, hit or miss with all of Andrew Berry's draft picks. And it ain't great. Like, even Greg Newsome right now, your two first-round picks are Greg Newsome and Jed Wills. And I'll be honest with you, if somebody's willing to give you any modicum of value, ESPN, Bill Barnwell just did a thing saying the Cardinals should trade for Greg Newsome. That was one of his 32 trade candidates for 32 teams. Amen. By the way, you actually could get something of value for Greg Newsome. I don't want to trade a good dude, but like, hey, you've already got another cornerback you're going to have to pay. I don't think you should pay Greg. You've got Cam Mitchell I'd like to see in the nickel. If somebody gives you something dumb, first, second, third round pick, let's have the conversation. But like, that's the best pick maybe in the first round you can make. JOK is a bona fide star. But once you get into the third, fourth, and fifth round, it looks bleak real quick. So you want to have the conversation. Hey, is it you know, this is the chicken or the egg. Is it Andrew Berry that's a bigger problem or Kevin? I'm just going to tell you, right now, teams give GMs 2, 3, 4 head coaches. Head coaches don't get 2 GMs. Unless you win a ring, unless you have won consistently, you don't get that. But I think what makes the Kevin thing so tough. And again, I have the reputation of being a Kevin hater simply because for the last 3 years I've said, man, I don't know that I love his leadership style. Because I'll be honest with you, players need to own their side of the street when it comes to leadership. But you can't outsource leadership like you can play calling, like the basic necessities. Even something like, you know, we've talked a lot about the absence of Bill Callahan, the absence of AVP. Yeah, Bill Callahan was a great offensive line coach. But I think Kevin has natural deficits as a communicator that I think are now proven through 7 games. I think if you want to get to why, like, this isn't going well, they didn't hire the right assistants in Ken Dorsey and Andy Dickerson. I think that starts. I think the other thing is, it's not just about that, guys. It is you didn't find somebody who could help Kevin disseminate his message. And so you have a team that it doesn't sound like they're on the same page. You have a team that DTR finding out on Saturday, which is what we learned from Jason Lloyd with the Morning Boys today. He found out on Saturday he was going to be the backup on Sunday. That's not, guys, we talk about functional. That's not functional. You want to start to picture why, when we start talking about communication, when we start talking about leadership, guys, that's a head coach. And that doesn't mean I'm ready to throw Kevin overboard. But today, you can read Kevin Stefanski giving up play calling a few different ways. One of which is he's trying to distance himself from an offense that is thermonuclear right now. You know one way to not get fired? Putting it on an offensive coordinator and not calling plays for 10 games. Man, Ken Dorsey really let us down this year. He was the OC for more than half a season. They never got it figured out. Oh, well. Good luck with your pension there, Ken, because we're going to pay you for a couple years that you're not the OC. The other way is Kevin giving up. I don't necessarily agree with that one. I know Kevin has aged like presidents. I also love the idea that we take a president and we take him from his first day and the last day of office. Like, look what he aged. Yes, it was 8 years. Take a picture of me from 8 years ago. Right now, I look like Vince Vaughn from a bender. Like a 3-week bender. That's what I look like now compared to Nick Wilson 8 years ago. when I was young and I had youth and promise. Now, that being said, I don't know where I was going with that. I just really wanted to get that in there. But I do think, like, before I decide whether Kevin should stay or go, we actually have to decide and kind of come to a consensus on if Kevin has power and what that power looks like. Because I think if your answer is, I think the morning show thought I was taking a shot at them today, and I was more, when they posted the video of Jason Lloyd, and we're going to play that audio at some point here in the near term, but when they posted the audio of Anthony and Kevin, Anthony and Jason going back and forth of, well, Kevin doesn't have any power now. I mean, did he get to keep AVP? Did he get to do this? My frustration was, man, like, Kevin has signed up for this. Kevin should have some level of power. This idea that Kevin is powerless to me is an excuse. And I think they thought I was saying that they were making that excuse. I'm speaking to the idea and not to their conversation on it. Because they can have whatever conversation they want, just like we do. But I don't think you, if your cop out, and not cop out, if your tactic with Kevin is, he has no power, so I can't blame him. That in and of itself is a massive indictment. And when it comes to things like leadership, when it comes to things like discipline, when it comes to things like cleaning up penalties, that 150% falls at the feet of the head coach. So no longer can I grade Kevin on the offense and play calling and points per game for over the final 10 games. Now, and this may be the good thing or the bad thing for Kevin, now I'm going to be grading you on, does this team play for you? Does this team play hard? Does this team clean up every mistake that they have? If you do, you maybe all of a sudden we lean towards back to, let's just go change the OC and the O-line coach. If you don't, probably getting you one step closer or several steps closer to going out the door. 216-474-0092. Steve, Midge, you guys stay right there. What of the Brown struggles do you think are actually on Kevin Stefanski? More on this next on 92.3 The Fan. Jason Lloyd on with the morning boys. Whoa! From earlier today, and giving his thoughts on the situation with Kevin. And again, I don't think it's useful to suggest Kevin Stefanski has no power. Even if the decision to move on from AVP was not his decision, even if the decision to bring in a new OC was not his decision. And I think it's really interesting. Guys, all Kevin tells you every time is, hey, I have say over football stuff, so Deshaun playing is my decision. Today, Kevin went out of his way to say, hey, it's my decision that I'm no longer calling the plays. This idea of, I don't believe it. Okay. Then, and because I understand, like, your response is going to be, well, of course he has to say that. I don't think that Kevin being a feckless cog in this busted machine is the defense of Kevin Stefanski that you think it is. Not when my biggest concerns, listen, I don't care how good an offensive play caller is. If you fall short as a head coach, you could be Bill Walsh as a play caller if you're Pat Shurmur as a head coach. And I'm not going to care. And so do I think that it is as simple as Kevin isn't a good head coach, fire Kevin? No. I think Kevin has a lot of people think he's a really good head coach. I also think that if you fired Kevin tomorrow, if Kevin wanted to be, he'd be the head coach next year somewhere else. That's not the conversation we're having. The conversation we're having is, how much of a role does Kevin have in this? And Kevin's side of the street isn't clean. Because for me, things like leadership, communication, and discipline fall directly at the head coach's feet. And those are the things, whether in discipline in terms of, like, self-discipline in terms of penalties, that's been a problem the entirety of Kevin's thing here. And when it comes to culture, culture has ebbed and flowed, right? So I get, guys, the Kubiak offense, a lot of fun when you run it the right way. Do I think there are ways that Kevin could be empowered more that might change the way that this looks on any given week? Sure. But that's not a defense of Kevin. It's an indictment of the Browns. But I think you also have to look at this and go, all right, here's where Kevin's messing up. And listen, there's an idea about fixing the Browns, quote unquote, that has nothing to do with firing Kevin and Andrew. One salient idea is, hey, what if we tell Paul D. Podesta to stay out in San Diego permanently? What if Jimmy actually decides to be the adult in the room that he tried to trade for 3 years ago and mind his P's and Q's and let football people do football people? But where the Browns are now, if I have to stomach the conversation of, hey, should we trade Miles? Which is a logical conversation you would have about a 29-year-old elite defensive player who, if it takes 3 years to rebuild, is going to be on the back end of his career when that happens. I'm still a no. I'm still, if you do that, you might lose me as a fan, but I understand the logic of the conversation. I have no interest in trading Miles. I have no interest in trading David Njoku. I have no interest. I'll be honest with you. They trade Wyatt. I'm going to be pretty pissed. It's a 28, 29-year-old guard. I think it's a 27, 28-year-old guard. He's really good at football. Those are hard to find. Keep talented players that are part of your core and let older players at the end of their career use those to get some assets. Or like in the case of Jed or Greg, if you're not going to go ahead and extend them, get value if you can. But I'm all here for, if you want to have the conversation that Andrew Berry's a problem, I'll listen. I like some of the trades he's made. The drafting hasn't been good enough. And I think there's a fundamental flaw here in how people perceive where we are with both those guys or with the structure in general. And the fundamental flaw is they keep looking at the success that they've had and saying, well, this is better than anybody since 1999. Which, guys, that's not the bar. Because the bar now, in fairness, because of the success they've had, the bar is now raising. We're now trying to find the next step. And right now, you're taking a step back when you need to take another step forward. The bar this year was follow up the 11-win season last year, the playoff berth, with another playoff berth, another 10-11-win season. The bar has not been met. And the bar has so comically not been met that you're 1-6 and you now appear to be in the running for the number one pick with Carolina, who has 1/10 of the talent that you have. This is, and by the way, this isn't you're a Super Bowl talented team. The roster does have flaws. Injuries are the biggest flaw, but the point is, you're not 1-6 because of talent. You're 1-6 because of culture. Kevin, as the head coach, cannot be given a pass on that. No matter how good-looking he is, no matter how much we like him, I think Kevin is genuinely a smart and decent fellow. He ain't no patsy. Kevin has made decisions like every other head coach in the NFL. Some have worked out, some haven't. But I continue to hear people give Kevin, the head coach, a pass because they like Kevin, the OC. I like Andrew Berry, the dapper football guy who knows really smart things about world life events. Andrew, the drafter, kind of pisses me off. Where we are with this team is, listen, if you want to let the football guys do the footballing, okay, that's a conversation to have. Just because we like Kevin or just because, well, where are we right now? Where have we been? Guys, they walked in with a quarterback situation handled. You heard Jason today? You heard Ken and Anthony? Because they've been saying it. Jimmy Haslam had to be talked into going and getting Deshaun Watson and moving on from Baker. Sure doesn't seem like that's all on Jimmy, does it? The bar is no longer be better than anybody since 99. The bar is catch Baltimore, catch Pittsburgh. Can't do anything about Jimmy. Can do something about the guys that walked into a promising young roster with mounds of cap space and mounds of talent and have not drafted another Pro Bowler since or developed one. 5 at 5 next on 92.3 The Fan.